expected to get. So I would like to welcome everyone who has come. Good morning to all of you. And I know amongst us, besides the honorable members who are here, we do have the Public Service Commission. We also have CETA. We have Palama as well. When I say CETA, I mean the Information Technology Agency, the State Information Technology Agency. Palama is the public administration, leadership, and management academy. I don't want to make a mistake. Public Service Commission is the, PSC is the Public Service Commission. So I'm sure there are representatives from, there are those who represent all sectors. They will be led by all delegations. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to go through the agenda and make a suggestion, which I know that members won't actually disagree with me, because the agenda is the briefing by the Public Service Commission. I think we would have preferred to start it with the CETA, because we already had them presenting last time, and then maybe if we can have them starting, and then we can, then the Public Service Commission can follow thereafter, and then we can end with Palama. And I must indicate that we have received an apology in advance from the minister, who will be having a very urgent meeting with the president, and we therefore will allow the minister to leave after a particular time. What we can do, can we request then to immediately have all the leaders of the delegation from three institutions introducing the delegation, then we start. And then we can, and anyone who's ready can do that. I take it that from the department, who's the leader of the delegation? Minister. Minister, Richard Baloyi will introduce himself and the delegation. Okay, but let's leave the minister, but let's have the department standing and then doing the introduction. Yes. Can the whole department, so that, you know what, somebody whispered to me, not the member, that said we don't know one another, you know, even if we met, it's important to just keep knowing who we are, so we're just doing for the benefit of knowing one another. It should be a continuous process. I think, yes, ma'am, you're right, you can introduce yourself and the whole department, they will have to stand up, then you ask them to just introduce themselves.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. I think I'm the only person from the DPSA this morning. My name is Michelle Williams, and I'm the government CIO. I'm not sure. I have colleagues, Bukhani, from the ministry, but I think I'm the only person from the department this morning. Thank you. I don't know if I've missed somebody. Thank you.
Okay, sure. Okay, yes.
Sita?
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. My name is Zoda Manasseh. I'm the Chairperson, non-executive Chairperson of CETA. I am accompanied by Ramabele Mahona Tinte, who is the acting CEO, stand up. And Moses Mtimunye, who is the Chief Strategic Services. And Bruce Rampolo, who is the Procurement Head. And Mulasehe Khaliwe, who's a GM Finance, and we've got Tanya Abrams, who's Government Relations. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, from CETA, Mem Zoto. Public Service Commission, Dr. Ramp will have to introduce the delegation.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Myself, my name is Ralph Mkichima. I'm the Chairperson of the Public Service Commission. I'm accompanied by the Acting Director General in the Office of the Public Service Commission, Mr. Dikofa. I'm also accompanied by our Deputy Director General, who is responsible for corporate services. Her name is Bontle Lerumo. We also have in our presence our parliamentary officer, Nozikiwe Kwaza. Thank you.
We didn't see them,
we just heard
the name.
Oh, they did stand up
there. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, members. Like we indicated, of course, we really parted unhappily last time with the CETA. I must indicate that we did get the apology from the minister, and we did get the presentation on the time that we actually requested it from the CETA. So as it stands, we are going to give the minister an opportunity to just round up the input around the three institutions, because the minister will be leaving us quite soon, and we must say then we'll take it up from there. Thank you.
Oh, sorry,
We've forgotten Palama, and it's here. And even ourselves, Palama, don't worry, we didn't even introduce ourselves. So let Palama start, and then we will come. You know, we didn't even introduce ourselves. So can we request Palama to do the introduction?
Honorable Chairperson, thank you. I thought that was deliberate, but thank you that we are given a chance to introduce ourselves. I'm Solomon, I'm the acting CEO from Palama, and with me in the delegation, I've got Memandisa Majesi, who is responsible for governance and strategic support, and also I've got Ntate Rufus Mutana, who is responsible for provider and partner mobilization, and Ntate Buthabelo Maja, who is responsible for curriculum management, and of course, the person with the past corporate finance, Carlo Fenta. Thank you, Madam.
Okay, thank you very much. Can we allow Comrade, Honorable Minister Richard Baloy to proceed?
No. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and the apology, colleagues. I was checking which side of the attendance register should I sign, on the ANC or on the IFP side. But I found my way through on government side. Chairperson, thank you very much. And once more, our apology, as we have confirmed, you received our letter, because it is always our intention, and actually it's a responsibility we have, that we need to treat the portfolio committee and give it the respect it deserves. So for our underperformance, or performance below expectation, I think that would be the best to indicate. Performance below expectation at our appearance last week through the presentation by CETA, we sincerely apologize. Today we are here to account to the portfolio committee as a representative of Parliament in the area of public service and administration. Three portfolios are going to be briefing the portfolio committee, as you have indicated, Chairperson. Mine is just to give some remarks. The leaders of the three portfolios we will lead in terms of the presentation. If I were to start with the Public Service Commission, when I give the remarks, I want to put it very clear, Chairperson, that for a Minister of Cabinet to give opening remarks when the Public Service Commission is to do a presentation is in no way undermining the independent status of the Public Service Commission. You will remember that there are certain executive functions in as far as the Public Service Commission is concerned that are the competency of the President of the Republic, in which case the President is working closely with the Minister of Public Service and Administration. It's important that we raise this, because otherwise it may appear like we are like compromising the independence of the Commission. The comments that I will want to do in each of the portfolios here is just to give a very short profile in terms of areas that I know the portfolio committee may have interest as an oversight body. You will remember that the Public Service Commission has been running with some vacancies, where the President was due to finalize and also our respective premiers were also to finalize in the area of appointment of public service commissioners. We can indicate firstly to say that as you remember, I think are you appearing for the first time, Chief, after you permanently appointed?
Yes, only in this committee, yes.
Okay. Yeah, Dr. Mgijima, as you remember, he was appointed for a short period up to the end of September. We confirmed that Dr. Mgijima has been appointed as a chairperson of the Public Service Commission until his term lapses. That will be in 2011. So he is the permanent chairperson of the Public Service Commission. That ends the period of acting. We also want to announce that Ms. Tengeni has been appointed as the deputy chairperson of the Public Service Commission. Further on, we want to confirm that your recommendation to the National Assembly that was approved and further recommended to the President for the appointment of Mr. Mtembu, Ben Mtembu and Jane Masomet as commissioners at national level has been approved. We also announced that Limpopo was also supposed to appoint a commissioner after the lapse of the term of their commissioner there. They have also finalized their appointment. We are still left with the Western Cape and the Northwest. We are interacting with the premiers concerned, and we are assured that they are going to finalize the appointment. The Eastern Cape has appointed Northern Cape. They are fast-tracking because they sent out already advertised, because the contract of the existing commissioner is expiring by December. So we believe that having started earlier, they will be in a position to address those issues. That is a situation that I can then reflect on as I open. The commission is going to lead you in presenting the annual report. Of course, Dr. Mgijima, as an executive authority, is all right in terms of the provision of the Constitution and the Public Service Commission Act. We'll deal with issues related to what the Commission does. CISA was here last week. We believe, and thanks, Chairperson, for your comments, that this time around our presentation reached the Portfolio Committee in time. We promise that we can only further improve on that. We may not actually perform below that record going forward. CETA is a state, as indicates, state information technology agency, a company that is owned on shareholders with government as the sole shareholder, with the Minister of Public Service and Administration representing the government as a shareholder. That is CETA, that is going to lead us in doing the presentation. My comment on the state of CETA is that, of course, I won't get deep into the issues that found us in a position where we were last week, because there were not more of content issues, but there were more of technical issues. So on the annual report, we believe, and also having addressed the gaps identified technically, CETA will be in a position to take us through. Just some few remarks about the issues related to the governance of CETA. You'll remember that we, like in the with the Public Service Commission, although sometimes for different reasons, we also have vacancies right from the governance side. Governance, I'm referring to the board, because the minister runs the governance day-to-day activities of CETA through a board. We have a board that is perfectly depleted at the moment. After the resignation of some four board members last year, but we can assure the portfolio committee that the remaining board members are firmly on the saddle to make sure that they run this entity to the direction as we expect. It is the responsibility of the Minister of Public Service and Administration to appoint board members. The CETA Act says that we do that after consultation with cabinet. Want to assure the portfolio committee that we will be in a position to fill the vacancies created by the resignation latest by the end of November. The cabinet processes have got their own ways. We have to look for space, but we are convinced that by the end of November we will have filled the vacancies remaining or created by the resignation. So that is the situation in as far as CETA is concerned. At the level of the executive, the top executive, this is the management team that keeps CETA going on a day-to-day basis, accountable to the board. You also have a situation of vacancies and people operating in acting capacities. When the chairperson introduced the CEO, she mentioned that Ramabele is the CEO and talked about Moses Mtimunye as a responsible for strategy. I want to indicate that we appointed a team of three as we're still finalizing the recruitment for the permanent chief executive officer. We appointed a team of three to be responsible for the top executive direction of CETA. And that is Ramabele, Moses Mtimunye, and Ikshan. The three, at the moment, are operating as a team that have that responsibility. At the instance of the board, in consultation with the minister or vice versa for reasons that may be indicated, this team get rotated at times. That's why for the last month or so, Moses was the acting CEO, and now Ramavele is the acting CEO. It's a rotational arrangement because they operated a team of three. The process of recruiting a chief executive officer is at an advanced stage, a high-level advanced stage. If advanced stage has three steps, we can say it is at the third step. We also, because a chief executive officer is also a board member from the executive side, when we finalize the filling of the vacancies for the board, we'll also be finalizing the appointment of the chief executive officer. So we expect to have a chief executive officer appointed latest by the end of November. As you might have seen in the adverts and stuff like that, that we actually ran that. Now that is Peter, which is going to do a presentation reflecting on the annual report. But both CETA, actually all the three, CETA, PSC, and Palama, when they deal with their annual report, they are well placed to respond to any other thing that may be raised. Say for areas where there may be sensitivities, but even if it comes to that point, they may be in a position to indicate as such. I'm raising this because one will not be available throughout, as I've requested, as the chair has indicated, one will not be available throughout to respond to those questions that otherwise one will be able to deal with. Palama, which is an academy, operating at a schedule of being a department under the executive authority of the Minister of Public Service and Administration, is going to do a presentation, and of course Professor Mullo will introduce himself as the CEO of Palama. I know he knows that he's got a responsibility to take forward the agenda of transforming Palama. Maybe in the process of transforming, he will change the title of the head of the department from a DG to a CEO. that's why in advance he's talking about CEO. But we can then say, don't move faster, acting DG.
Why not a team?
yeah, the acting DG of his professor, Tony Mollo. Now, Palama, of course, is going to deal with that. In terms of areas where the political head of Palama has to deal with, that is in the appointment area. The position of the DG became vacant when the contract of the former DG lapsed. And we then advertise it running. I think in no time we'll be in a position to finalize in as far as appointment is concerned. So these are the comments that one can give to them. See, here we are available. If you ask us to jump, we'll just ask to which direction. If we jump into the direction where there is fire, as we are jumping, not before we jump, as we are jumping, we'll be asking, will this fire not burn up? But jumping at the same time. So we are all at your disposal to respond to anything that you would be asking from us. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Is the Deputy Minister not able? In apology, ne? Okay.
Actually, Minister, I was now coming to the issues of the apologies that I have, because now I know we are settled and those who are not here definitely won't come. We have an apology from Honorable Dreyer, who won't be here today in this meeting, and we have an apology from Deputy Minister Padayaki, who cannot be here as well. And I must say, Honorable Minister, we did receive the apology which we are well receiving. And like I indicated, that everything is well for today. We think we'll proceed well into the future. And we also appreciate that you've shown that respect. You understand how we operate with Parliament. Without any waste of time, then can we then proceed congratulating you, Dr. Ralph Mgijima, for being appointed the chairperson of the Public Service Commission. Can we then proceed to the presentation by Sita? Is Sita ready? Oh, great.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I think the Minister has already apologized for what happened last week. We also had a presentation yesterday to the Portfolio Committee of SEP, which was well received because we're dealing with the SEP specifically for the services that are rendered by CPC to SEP. And I think the chairman of the Portfolio Committee there is going to have a discussion with you because they thought of making sure that we synchronize these presentations to save CETA from, because last week we were here and this week we were supposed to be here yesterday. So I'm sure she will speak to you. We are here to mainly deal with the provision that CETA provides for, services that CETA provides to government, and also we are here to deal with the procurement issues raised in some of the tenders that have been raised in the media, like the OMI online and the smart cards. But just before I allow Moses Mutimunye to do the presentation, I just would like to deal with the issue of corporate governance at CETA and inform the Portfolio Committee, although this was mentioned last time, that we have a very robust governance structure at CETA. We have the Audit Committee, which actually looks at all the issues that are raised. We have a very strong internal audit. We also have an anti-fraud line, which is reported on to the Audit Committee on a regular basis. And matters that are raised there are always investigated. We also have a report by the Auditor General, which we are trying to improve all the time. And last year, in the financial year 2007-08, we had an unqualified audit report, but with matters of emphasis. With matters of emphasis. But this year, we have moved from that matters of emphasis to a lower level, which is other matters. We are always trying to get a clean audit report without anything. But this year, there were three main issues that were raised. One were the system-related issues, which we hope that after the introduction of the ERP system in this next month, in November, those issues will be dealt with. The issues of other issues of governance, appointment of board members and CEO, the minister has already been has raised them. And then the other issue which will stay with us, and we hope that the Portfolio Committee and together with the Minister is going to help us with that, is the signing of the SLAs. But I'm pleased to say that there has been a great improvement, as you can see in the presentation. They're about 75% on in terms of the signing of the SLAs. But the law says that there must be 100%. So that's why that issue will always remain with us. The other challenges that we have in terms of the procurement issues, one of the challenges that we are facing with, and we are dealing with these challenges, is that some of the CETA employees leave CETA and join IT companies, and that causes a lot of problems. And then also some suppliers offer jobs to some of our staff members during the processes of tenders. And also one of the problems is leaking of documents from CETA to suppliers and to newspapers. Now, how we have addressed this as a board, we decided that we are going to make sure that in all the contracts that are signed with suppliers, we are going to put it as a clause that suppliers, during the, if they win the tender, they will not employ SITA people during the course of that tender, so that it prevents. And we also will put a clause that if you do that, the tender then becomes, you actually have breached your contract. We also are putting it in the contract that if we discover that you've made any offer to any SITA employee during the tender procedures and during the adjudication, that your contract becomes null and void as well. We are actually continuously trying to improve those things. And we are making sure that everything that has been brought into our attention, we investigate, and hence you see a lot of things that are coming out. We have also had a discussion with the Special Investigating Unit to assist us, because our investigators are limited in terms of going beyond some of the normal investigation procedures. For example, we are unable to go and look at people's bank accounts, but the Special Investigation Unit can do that. So we've already asked them to assist us in those matters. Moses will deal with those specific issues that have been raised, and I think I'll hand over to Moses. Moses, and Tom,
thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Portfolio Committee members, thank you for affording us an opportunity again today to come and correct what transpired last week. As the Minister has indicated, we really truly apologize for that issue. I will go through the presentation. The matter for discussion essentially is that I will talk to the mandate as we have it, the services that are mandated that we're supposed to do, how we classify what we call must and may services as per the Act, and explain the service offerings that we have as an organization that we provide to government. I will talk to service delivery prescripts. I will talk to procurement issues that have been raised that I believe will be of interest to portfolio committee members. I will also talk to, for instance, who am I online, and there may be an articulation on the smart card, even though there's still a process on the go in terms of this particular tender, and therefore, though we are raising it here, we will not be able to go into detail on it because there is currently a process on the go with forensic audit and with the AG being interested in what has transpired there. The committee last week requested that we submit the list of the clients we have and their information. I have put there as a matter of discussion, but submitted with the submission that came through on Monday was a list which is separate, which will not be part of the presentation, but which are separate, which are presented separately. I will talk to some high level allegations of corruption, the high risk areas, and some of the analysis. In terms of the SITA mandate, what we are expected to do as an organization is that we're supposed to, through our acts, through our performance, through the use of information technology, information systems, and other related services, to improve service delivery to the public. So the provision of IT and IT services must be with an intent solely to improve service delivery to the public. And secondly, in applying those technologies, we're supposed to make sure that efficiency of operations in government is promoted. This depiction essentially provides an understanding of the kind of services that we provide, which are mandated, and this come out of either the Act itself or the regulations. We are supposed to provide what is called the private telecoms network, which is in the Act directly. We're supposed to provide what we call transversal systems in the Act. We are supposed to manage ICT procurement on behalf of the state. It's in the regulations. We are supposed to set standards and certify in the acquisition against the standards that have been set. It's in the regulations. we are supposed to provide for information systems convergence strategies in the regulations. We're supposed to come up with a disaster recovery strategy for all ICT systems, particularly those that are critical to the running of the state. It's in the regulations. We are supposed to have at our disposal all information systems inventory. It's actually what we call the asset register or asset management of all information systems that government has. It's in the regulations. We're supposed to provide ICT research and plan for it. It's in the regulations. And obviously, we need to manage everything as spoken to here in terms of a business agreement that must be entered into between CITA and the government department, and then supported by a services level agreement, and that comes out of the regulations as well. If we categorize the MAC and MAE services which we provide, there are a few. I've already touched on the private telecommunications network and a value-added network. The ECT Act essentially has converged these two services into what we can call a converged communications service provision, essentially being able to provide everything around communications. We're supposed to provide what we call transversal information systems. We're supposed to provide data processing. We're supposed to procure IT for government. We're supposed to set standards with regarding interoperability and standards regarding information system security. We're supposed to certify all acquisitions in terms of compliance to the set standards that are spoken about. We're supposed to eliminate duplication. We're supposed to leverage economies of scale. On the MAE side, we may provide ICT-related training. We may provide application software development. We may maintain software and infrastructure in the ICT space. We may provide unique data processing for department-specific applications or systems. We may provide technology business advice for IT. We may carry out research and development. We may provide management services, and we may sell authentication products. Now, there are departments where the whole service provision lifecycle has been outsourced to CITA. So essentially, in those environments, what looks like a MAE, as indicated here, suddenly becomes a MAC because it's part of a fully outsourced service. Now, in explaining the kind of services which we provide to government, we have developed what we call a service catalog. This service catalog outlines the full scope of the services that we provide. Now, this catalog provides for 7 capability areas where the services are being provided for. Those 7 capability areas have been broken down into 56 service groups or sub-capability areas. And those sub-capability areas have also been broken further down into 233 service elements, and those service elements comprise of 1,140 service components. So at any given time, the requirements for service from government could fall in within any of that 1,104 services that which we provide to government departments. This is how we cluster them. There is on the 4 quadrants on the left, there is what we call full outsourcing. Just below that is what we call value-added services. On the right upper corner, looks like a yellow or to me, is what we call systems integration and solution development, and the bottom one being support and transaction services. So this is how we group the services which we provide to government. Going down, we explain each and every one of those services. What do we mean by, in the outsourcing services, what do we mean by managed applications? Managed applications is essentially a complete suite of application management services, including maintenance and support of an application, groups of application, or the entire application portfolio. The services that come out of that is stuff like application problem resolution and application service support. That is, if there is a deployed solution in a government department, for instance, an HR system that we are maintaining, the whole issue of if the system goes down, the maintenance and support of this particular system falls within this particular service category. And so it goes in there. And I think the information is there for members to be able to read. I could go individually one for members to see. So in the coming four slides, we have gone into a breakdown exactly what is it that we provide. We also provide what we call managed desktop. And in the managed desktop, we talk about the device lifecycle management, the field support hardware, filing and print services. And the managed desktop essentially is what we see on people's desks, the hardware itself, and making sure that they are working in the learning environment. And then it's what we call the managed infrastructure. The managed infrastructure services refers to the provision or management of an organization's entire IT infrastructure to enable streamlining of IT operations while increasing flexibility, scalability, predictability, and security. In that particular space, we talk about hosting services and storage services. In the main, this hosting is in Pretoria, St. Children, and within the Pretoria town area. We talk about the network connectivity, which we call the white area network, how we connect government departments within a specific precinct or right across the geographies. How do we connect government in Pretoria and government here and make sure that there's seamless transaction and provision of information right across? We're in the process of developing and deploying what we call IP telephony. We've already tried a little bit of it in 140 Plain Street as a way of a proof of concept, which was successful. And we provide for what we call collaboration services, web conferencing and all those things. In the value-added services, what does that mean? There is an element of sourcing. Now, in the sourcing itself, which we actually do through our procurement, currently our procurement function, is through the identification of synergies in government acquisition, the scale of consolidated government spend can be leveraged to cost-effectively procure IT on behalf of government clients. End-to-end solution or end-to-end sourcing services, including strategic sourcing to address similar cross-government requirements, as well as singular procurement request fulfillment for specific requests. And in there, the services are strategic sourcing, tactical sourcing, vendor management, contract management and maintenance, requisitions and fulfillment, supply and demand management, and as well reporting on procurement activities. In that space, we also do what we call IT consulting and advisory. In IT consulting, we provide for what we call consulting and advisory services, which focuses on providing high-value consulting services. Consulting services in key areas of IT strategy, security, governance, and enterprise architecture. These services assist in defining how organizations' IT capabilities operate and ensure that the solutions developed adhere to the government-wide enterprise architecture, interoperability, and security standards. Key capabilities and services we offer in the space is around what we call enterprise architecture, research on technology trends, IT governance maturity assessment, IT governance design, IT strategy development, IT strategy execution, security advisory mechanisms, and certifications. And then the last one under that particular cluster is the information management. This talks to the ability to access, share, and use timely information, which is critically important to business efficiency. CITAS Information Management Services has a deep understanding of the business and technology dimensions of the information challenge to help organizations improve decision-making, financial management, regulatory compliance, and customer service. And there we talk to business intelligence. In the business intelligence, currently we host what we call Vulindlela as part of the transversal systems of BES, PESAL, and LOGIS, on how that can be used to enhance decision making within government. We also do data management and architecture. There's information management diagnosis, and we do portals and content management. There's also security management within this particular cluster. And here, it encompasses the entire life cycle of security solutions from execution, initial security assessment, certification strategies, to the design and implementation and operation of security solutions. Now, in this particular service space, in the main, we are informed by government departments and government prescripts, particularly informed by NIA and COMSEC and what they prescribe. And so we advise government based on that. Though we have specific capabilities in the networking, how do we protect our data networks and how do we protect our networks and infrastructure, but we also do consulting in security in the specific unique environments within government departments themselves. In the systems integration, which is fairly new, in the scale that we're talking about now, we've always done this, particularly in the outsourced environments of SEPs and DOD. Now we're trying to take this to the bigger government. Is that we're talking about solutions development and systems integration. In the solutions development, systems development brings together under one umbrella the full scope of the solution development lifecycle from project inception through to the deployment of solutions into an operational environment. Here we talk about how do we do planning, how do we design, how do we develop, how do we test and deploy, and where do we host the solution, how do we make sure that there is sufficient security, and how do we advise in terms of issue of network availability and disaster recovery. And on the system integration side, we talk to CETA playing the role of a prime systems integrator, the full scope of which is about how do we make sure that if government continues to buy at high level all these integrated systems to enable an integrated government, how do we make sure that we have a capability that can manage this integration? And there we talk about how do we design integration architecture, how do we make sure that there is a full design on integration, how do we build those components, and how the applications themselves integrate, and the infrastructure that's required to make the integration a success. On the support and transactional services, we do a lot of commercial printing. As members would be aware, we have high quality printer capability where we provide printing services for some municipalities for the rates and taxes statements. We also print, at times we are requested to print ID books, at times we are requested to print salary advices of government employees through the printing services which we have. We also provide training, and this training essentially is formative training in IT, how to use PCs, Windows, and training in some of the systems such as Tesla, BES, and stuff like that, and that we provide. We also have what we call a business contact center. Members would know that in recent times we have hosted the IEC's call center for the purposes of the election. We are also hosting the call center for the presidential hotline, which we manage on behalf of the president. We also provide project management services where we say how do we manage all projects that come through. In terms of going forward, in terms of the business agreements and service levels, as per the service delivery prescripts, I spoke about these prescripts being the business agreement that we must have with each and every government department that we engage with, and the supporting service level agreement. The Act, as per Chapter 6 of the Chapter 6 at Section 20, says a business agreement must regulate the relationship between the individual participating department or organs of state and the agency, and that must be concluded before work can happen. and the business agreement must essentially be supported by a service level agreement. And hence, every time we talk, we raise an issue of non-signed service level agreement because the law says that is what must happen. And unfortunately, we run very late into the year. You find that these things are not signed off. Essentially, we are doing services in a state of breaking the law. Now, I will quickly go into how we are doing on the basis of the service level agreement. And we've broken the articulation of the service level agreements as per the clusters, as we have clustered the organization, taking into consideration that we support all government departments in the main and all provinces in the main. Okay, now we're back here. Sorry for that. The first cluster we're talking to is the DOD, Department of Defense. We have 20 signed service level agreements. Now, the service level agreements talk to 20 services that we provide as per the discussion that I've had now on the services that we provide. Now, the challenge was, how do I make it available to members at service, individual service level agreement? So we tried to cluster it at high level to say we have 20 services, there's 20 service level agreements, and right now all of them have been signed. In the CERT environment, we have seven SLAs, and right now all of them have not been signed as yet. Though work that we're doing, we have received preliminary orders for the work to be done with a view that once the negotiations on the SLAs have been concluded, they will be signed. Portfolio members, on this slide, I must quickly alert you that if you look at the slide that you may have in front of you, is that the columns on top, the mandatory services SLA and the optional SLAs, in terms of what you have in front of you, the mandatory SLAs is exactly on or above the signed, and the optional SLAs are exactly on top of the not signed, and then the total is on the second signed. It was a mistake in the development of this particular presentation. This is how it actually should look like. Is on the mandatory SLAs, we have signed and not signed, and on the optional, we have signed and not signed, and we have a total of the SLAs and obviously what the percentage is. In the crime prevention cluster, which comprises the National Prosecution Authority, NIA, the Independent Complaints Directorate, Correctional Services, and Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, is there are 20 SLAs that we need to have. Currently, two of them have not been signed in the mandatory services space, and there is one that is not signed in the optional services. We have 18 currently that have been signed right now. In the economic investment and employment cluster, which comprise a number of customer domains, there are 58 service level agreements that we need to have. 79% of those are currently signed. In the governance, administration, and international cluster, we're supposed to have 57 SLAs. Only 72% of that is signed. We have Department of Social Development and SASA as a separate cluster because of the size of the environment. We only have 77% of the SLA signed there in that environment. In the social cluster, we are only at 85% of the service level agreement signed, and of a total that should have been signed of 74. And then in the provinces, we have around about 86% of the service level agreements right across the country on the 9 provinces that we're doing work in. 13.7 has not been signed yet. Now, I think the chairperson of the board has already indicated on the governance mechanisms that we have in the organization in terms of the board taking governance responsibility for the organization, us having the audit and risk committee that take responsibility for making sure that things are supposed to be in the organization with a strong audit and risk. Now, some of the issues that are coming through here, some of them have come through from external to the organization, but the bulk of them are essentially as a result of some of the mechanisms that we've put in place where people raise and raise issues and they whistle blow and we start to do the investigation. And hence, some of these things are being picked up. One of the core issues from a procurement perspective that has been very topical, particularly in the corridors here, is the Who Am I online tender from the Department of Home Affairs. CETA did a recommendation on this particular tender for award by the department, and the department eventually did that. But the AG's report highlighted that in our recommendations, we had failed to make sure that we all comply with our tender policies. We've acknowledged the omissions that have been, and we are now making sure that the controls are tightened up. There is a sick report which has been submitted by the AG, and there were seven areas where they had raised issues. In the main, for instance, how do we make sure that before we engage with the government CIO, that we know fully well, without doubt, that that CIO is actually a designated official, fully appointed by the department. In terms of the regulations, we're supposed to do that. We, in the past, assumed that the appointment as the CIO means this person takes responsibility for acquisitions in IT. Now the AG says, over and above that, you must go in and make sure that there is a formal appointment before you engage with this particular person. For instance, we are supposed to, the department is supposed to constitute what we call the bid evaluation committee, and that bid evaluation committee must be appointed by the accounting officer in the department as per our procedures, as per the policies which we have. Now, in this instance, we found that some of the people that were appointed by the department, for instance, the chairperson of the bid evaluation committee was not a permanent employee of the department. We didn't know that. So we assumed that because they were appointed by the DG, we assumed that it was all above board, and we found that this is what the AG is picking up, and we are putting mechanisms now to make sure that these things are addressed. The other, in the Limpopo province, there are around about 4 or 5 tender irregularities which we have picked up through our internal audit process, where tenders were awarded to suppliers by a person who did not have delegation. In the provinces, the provincial managers have a delegation to put a risk to the organization up to a maximum of 500,000. And now we found that this person had appointed tenders up to 12 million without the necessary approval. There is a disciplinary hearing in this particular matter. The person is suspended. In actual fact, the disciplinary hearing has now been concluded. We are awaiting the verdict of the chairperson of the disciplinary hearing. There have been issues that have been raised in the transversal tender space, particularly in tenders that deal with cabling, in tenders that deal with servers and switching gear, and tenders that deal with maintenance. These are transversal tenders. Essentially, in the past, we used to build what we call a preferred list of suppliers. In the process of trying to refresh that with a view of doing an outright appointment, a number of people have come forward to say they are unhappy with the process because essentially, according to them, we are excluding a big element of the SMEs and BE companies. So we're in the process of revoking that and going on to a consultation process on how we can make sure that the process is as inclusive as possible. There has been an issue, again, on what we call the Next Generation e-government tender, which was in the media as well. There were allegations made. The allegations were submitted to the AG to investigate. The AG came back and said the allegations were without any merit. But we're putting it up here because it was a subject of speculation in the media, and we're putting it here. This is how and what has happened. There are other issues on that particular e-government tender. Currently, what we've done, when we started this particular program and the tender process, we agreed that we'll have the Attorney General doing what we call agreed upon procedures to provide for us at specific stages in the procurement process a certificate saying the process is above board and therefore we can go forward. Up to so far, there is an outstanding report that the AG must give us to conclude this particular process so that we can issue a recommendation over to the department. There are other tenders that were also, I think, raised here, for instance, in the integrated justice cluster environment, for instance, on the exhibit management, the automatic vehicle locations, the N-Cypher security devices, and the detention management. Those particular delays were escalated up to the DG, the DGs in this particular cluster. We engaged with the DG, and there are agreements in place on how we're going to take the engagement forward in terms of fast-tracking this particular cluster, taking into consideration of its importance to the transformation of the justice cluster. Continuing there were also issues raised by SMEs, particularly in the provinces, on what we call seat management service tender, where we allow government to lease equipment from suppliers right across the country. Some provinces were a little bit unhappy about the actual tender process that we had got into, that the advertisement of the refresh of the tender was issued on the government bulletin and on the CETA website. And some are saying we should have also gone to the local municipalities in where they are in the local provinces. So there is currently engagement on how we can correct the particular situation. There obviously are other tenders that have been that are on the table that people are worried about, that they may look like they are not supporting local economic development and not contributing to the eradication of unemployment. Currently, there is a draft procurement strategy on the table on how we're going to decentralize procurement. Upon approval of this particular strategy, we will then be doing procurement in the provinces, so that people in the provinces can then be able to access CETA tender processes, and in that way build smaller entities who can then also contribute towards eradication or halving of unemployment. Some of the challenges that we have had to deal with in the procurement environment, the dealing with the actual allegations around corruption. What are we doing? We are particularly in the high ticket items. We are involving auditors, and particularly the AG, in terms of making sure that the process is clean. We are collaborating with the SIU. There is an anti-corruption and anti-fraud drug within the organization, and we're making pronouncements around it, and we are really saying we cannot hide about these things. We've got to deal with these issues head on. And there's currently a process in place to develop what we call processes that will regulate how specifications are being developed within government departments before they even come to us, so that we secure and provide for assurance in this particular environment. The second challenge is around how do we deal with the local economic development requirements of the provinces and local government. I've already spoken to that particular point. There's already an issue around the SME and the BEE imperatives. On big tenders, we are already saying whoever wins and they are a big supplier, they need to set aside up to 30% of the particular tender to BEEs, so that we help in the enterprise development. There have been issues that our procurement lead times are long. The strategy I spoke about and the capacitation of the strategy on procurement is addressing the particular environment. There are capacity challenges as well in the procurement environment. And we're saying there is a strategy on the table on how we're going to manage this particular environment, and as well as undertaking competency assessment to close the skills gap. What we didn't have in the past and we continue to struggle with is the whole issue of having no access to government's long-term ICT master plans, so that we can manage what we call the demand of government, which will enable us to ensure proper negotiations with suppliers. This is being raised at the appropriate forum, and we are currently sensitizing the stakeholders with a view of changing this thing around. Our non-compliance with our own prescripts, there are education sessions on the go. Disciplinary measures are in place for non-conformance, and we're saying using both the carrot and the stick method, we believe we can turn this around. There's always been issues around the leaking of procurement information. We've already done a proof of concept, and from a tool set perspective, how we can manage information with an organization and track whether people can leak the information or not. We've found that it works, and we will be seeking to implement to make sure that we can track who and what information is leaked from where, and then we can arrest the situation. I've already addressed the issue with audit findings. Who am I online? I've already spoken to the issues that were actually at play in this particular tender, particularly who am I online. I've already highlighted initially on around some of the excesses that were there which were found out. And here I continue, particularly including the issue around the BEC and its composition and their declaration and stuff like that. And I'll continue. On the comprehensive list of clients and information, the list has been submitted, and obviously there's very little I can really address on this particular matter, except to say that the list there includes, in our own understanding, our client is the government CIO, and the list therefore contains all the government CIOs that we have, their contact details, and their email addresses. And essentially that brings me to the conclusion of the presentation itself.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, today is the presentation. Can I then allow space for discussion on this matter? Are there issues that the members want to raise? Can I request the members then to introduce themselves before they speak, because they were not introduced at all? Honorable Faith Pikani.
Good morning to everyone. My name is Faith Pikani. Representing the ANC, I have a few points of questions, and if Chairperson will allow me, some might be questions that I want an immediate answer, because I might want to make a follow-up based on the presentation. I'd like to, referring to the Act, of course, ask Sita as to, in terms of that act, to what extent do you think, or can you confirm that we have, or how would you rate yourself, rather, in terms of complying to the act towards service delivery? If you had to rate yourself in terms of a percentage, where would you rate yourself from 0 to 100% in terms of effectiveness of service delivery? Of course, keeping up with what you are saying, your mandate is in terms of the Act. I don't know if it's perhaps the way the presenter expresses himself, but you keep on referring to "you're supposed to." Now, I'm asking myself, if it's your mandate, why aren't you doing it the way you are in fact, the implementation processes of your mandated services to government. You keep on saying you're supposed to, almost as though you've got something that's blocking you or an obstacle that's preventing you from implementing the way the regulations are supposed to be implemented. I'm not so sure if that is the way you're expressing yourself or are there really problems in terms of your implementation processes or in terms of being able to comply to what the regulations expect you to do. Then I have, in terms of your, there's something on procurement. Okay, on the slide that goes on, I'm sorry now, there's no pages there, but on the system integration services, it's fine, I can see what your business services are and you are describing them and you are actually indicating what applications are supposed to be applied. But how do you make sure that this integration does measure up to the required government service delivery? Is it really happening? Your implementation processes, the way they are not attached to time frames as well, is making me wonder if this is really, are these issues that are really taking place or not? For example, if you are going to talk about the design integration architecture, what about it? Is there an implementation process? Is there a program of action that's in place that ensures that according to a particular stipulated time frame, this must have been done? I continuously have question marks in terms of your implementation processes. Your training, for example, this training that's being delivered, is it solely to the people who are employed within CETA, or are you trying to tell us that you do offer training in the form of a bursary, for example? Are there outside communities that are benefiting out of CETA? That is CETA, by the way, a profit-making organization? And if so, how are you contributing out of the profits that you are making towards community development, for example, training of learners, and what projects are there, what programs are there that show that you actually do have the training services? Okay, and then in terms of, you mentioned there with your business agreements, the service level agreements, there seems to be a problem where you have a particular percentage allocated to what is supposed to have been 100%, is like, for example, 96% or so. These agreements that are not being signed off, what's the problem? Why aren't they signed off? And why the delay in having these agreements signed off? Who am I online? Somewhere you mentioned that CETA acknowledges the omissions, controls tightened. That's just a group of words, but it doesn't say what's actually being done there, or what's happening. There isn't a direct answer as to, or is it that the bid evaluation processes perhaps have some grey areas? And if they do have grey areas, what is the legislation in relation to that? What should be happening? Do you feel that there needs to be a re-evaluation of some of the legislation in the processes? Or what have you done to advance the actual SLA processes? You know? Yeah, I think that's it for now, Chairperson. Thank you.
Let me take your hand and then we'll get a response from you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Lito Suka, the member of the ANC in the committee. Chairperson, I would ask only one or two questions, then I'll allow for responses. Maybe those responses might cause me to ask more questions. Chairperson, on their document, on the document that we have been given and referred to by the presenter, I see that on the business agreement that they stated clearly, which have got good intentions, I think it's bullet point 2 and 3. I'm trying to get to those bullet points. And I want to link that with the unsigned service level agreement, with particular reference to the subs, to a tune of 1 billion rand. I'm just wondering that the bullet 1 and 2 on page 16 on your document. Because I had to number mine, my own one. Now I'll improvise. that's page 16. A business agreement to regulate the relationship between individual participating departments or organs of state and the agency must be concluded. The second bullet point, the business agreement must be supported by service level agreement. Now, if you turn over to page 18, where figures have been stated under sub business agreement, there are no agreements that have been entered into. These huge amounts of money, it's a cause of concern. I'm not sure whether why has it happened in the manner in which it is reflected in the bigger document on the annual report. Not this one, but where's my document that was here now? On the bigger document that I had on this one, if you check on pages at the back of it, I've noted that CETA did not follow the rules of the game. And that's why the Auditor General has reflected in the manner in which he has done. I just want to get your understanding that it seems to me you did not support some of the departments. Maybe it's the same question, but in a different way. Are you not wary of the amount of money that are spent by those departments without making intervening in terms of the corrective measures? Because at the end of the day, in terms of the PFMA, surely somebody has to account and take responsibility. It will go back maybe to the DG. The second point, Chairperson, that I wanted to check with the department on the presentation are the figures and the percentages. That's my last thing as of now. I just need some little bit of education as to how do you arrive at a particular percentage in terms of these slides. Because I'm trying to calculate very hard as to at the last column, you will speak of 50% or 75%, and yet, for instance, I want to demonstrate this by saying the signed under mandatory SLAs, the Department of Public Works signed 0. And then optional, not signed, 1. Then say signed 3. Well, that will give you 75%. I don't understand the your calculation, because that's where it is saying also under Department of Home Affairs, 4, not signed, 1. And then we've got 50%. I just want to get the what informs these percentages? How do you arrive at them? Because they might, mathematically, to me, it might not make sense. Can you give me some little bit of explanation, almost in all these columns? And under these percentages, the service level agreement, the province now, my last question, is on the issue of the KZN. They were expected to sign a particular number of performance service level agreements. Out of 42, they only signed, not signed 20, and the total is 62. Surely that's a huge number to relax from a particular province. With a lesser concern, though concerns are equal, the Free State. And the last one is the Gauteng. Can we get some information as to what happened based on your document that is in front of me? That is page, I'm referring then on page 23 under provinces. Can you just explain to me on the matter?
I'm aware that other members want to ask, but can I request the minister to respond to this first round and then we'll proceed.
Chairperson, thanks. The reason that I requested to come in at this stage is that as I requested earlier on, my next meeting is due. I just want to comment on one point and then also check if honourable members may feel that there are questions that I may have to personally respond to raise those things before I take leave. The comment I want to make on is that there are some cases that are undergoing investigation. I have actually drawn CITA's attention to the fact that these cases are undergoing forensic investigation, serious investigation. That talking about those cases at a public platform may actually jeopardize the investigation itself. Even raising CITA's position on these issues may also be an unwarranted opportunistic maneuver, because a CITA will also have to answer in some of these cases. I've raised this thing with them. I'm not going to mention which cases because I don't want it to come from me that I indicated these are actually going to be investigated. Can you imagine if at a public platform it is said you are going to be investigated, the kind of cover-up that will be coming in as far as those issues are concerned. It's unfortunate that that information has been disclosed. I was prepared to take members of the committee into confidence at a closed session, because we don't want to, in our zero tolerance to corruption, you don't want to actually drill holes to our own cases. That you actually find yourself wanting when you have to act like that. I just want to raise that and trust that without me having mentioned, if follow-up questions are raised by members, CITA will respond responsibly in those cases. I leave it to them to actually indicate as to which ones I'm talking about, because I have specifically indicated that those areas should be treated in a particular manner. Thank you. And that's what I wanted to indicate. But of course, like I said, if there are any other questions that they may, I mean, honorable members may be saying that the minister may have to respond before I leave, with due respect.
Thanks, Minister. Honorable Williams, I can see Honorable Madileke and Honorable Hoss. And that's all.
My name is Adrian Williams. I'm in the committee and I'm representing the African National Congress. Okay. The question I've got for the CETA is, what's the total value of the non-signed service agreements? In other words, then, for instance, in the Eastern Cape, if there's 53 signed, and three not signed, or what we could say, there's 50 not signed in the whole in all the provinces, and 315 signed. What's the value of these 50? I mean, are these significant? You know, are these the huge ones haven't been signed, and the less significant ones have been signed? So I'd like to know what's the total value of the non-signed agreements in comparison with the total of all of the agreements. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. On the annual report, we are having the
CEO who has resigned in 31 July 2008.
One.
Okay, my name is.
What's your name?
I'm a committee member.
Honorable member.
Joanna.
I was saying to a person, the CEO resigned on the 31 July 2008. And then, as I'm looking the annual report, we are having the acting CEO. It means since July 2008, the institution was running with the CEO. So I want to know how long is the CEO acting in the department. And the other one is that there are many acting posts. So it means Sita is running with acting. And there's a cry on we are not we on job or sustainable job. So I want to know how long is these people acting on Sita.
Thank you. Honorable Rasul will be followed by the last honorable
Yeah, thank you very much. Chairperson, I'm Ibrahim Rasool, ANC Member of Parliament. And I think that it's really some things that I think are strategic questions that I would wonder if it's not the minister who would need to cause a fundamental rethink of the CETA procedures. You see, you're dealing with a entity with fairly high stakes, massive tenders, budgets on the one hand, and easy growth because needs are there all the time, new technologies are on the market all the time. Any official or department can say we need this one because this has become obsolete. So you're dealing with shifting sands all the time. And is it enough, going through the procurement issues raised here, is it enough for CETA to be reacting to the Auditor General's reports in order to tighten up what is basically an accounting exercise? An accounting exercise makes sure that the books are okay, but it doesn't fundamentally address the ethical foundations that is needed in an organization that deals with the kind of budgets and the kind of need shifts that I think CETA deals with. And this is where I thought that the minister may need to be proactive in saying what the AG is saying is symptomatic, but what I need to address is the ethical foundation. How do I close up all the loopholes in CETA? And that means, for example, asking the question, is CETA managing procurement effectively? From the front part of the conveyor belt, which is needs identification, because someone can come to an official and say, listen, you're using this hardware and this software, but we've got a better one. Even if the current one is okay, but you can create a need, which then means that you pass that need on and becomes a procurement because you feel all the time that you, and it's not just in CETA, CETA becomes the intermediary. So how do you make it watertight from need identification even to maintenance? Because you find that you get such a technology that no one in the department can manage it, so you then, having procured the technology, you've got to outsource the maintenance. And that creates another need and another expenditure. So how do you manage from the beginning till the end and everything in between in a watertight way? The second thing, how does CETA procure the right kind of services within it or the right kind of skills within it to write up the specs? Who writes up the specs? Someone can, I've heard of where I was in the Western Cape, a company writes up the specs, gives it to an official, the official presents the specs and is procured, but only that company can provide those specs. So you So the procurement process is great. But the point is, does CETA have the ability to verify and write up the kind of specs as per needs, real needs? The second one is procurement management. How do we manage it? And I think that we now see that CETA says procurement is now a core function within it. It's a late thing, but I think that is a good thing. Contract management. Because sometimes we don't have people who can see all the loopholes in a contract. And then the companies drive buses through us because we don't have that expertise. Then I think that there's the issue that I think is raised in a debate that is raised within the way CETA responds to the procurement challenges is centralization of processes versus decentralization. Now, that depends on two things. What's the degree of expertise from the center down to the ground? And what is the degree of honesty from the center down to the ground? Do you get more expertise as you go down to the ground or less? Because if you have less, it's more dangerous. Do you have more honesty amongst the few people at the top, or does the honesty increase as you go down to the ground? If the honesty decreases going down to the ground, it's more dangerous. So what is looks like a great thing, decentralization, may in fact be dangerous. And I think that the minister may need to make an assessment of whether the time is right for decentralization based on the skills base and the honesty base and the ethics and all of those kind of things. Then, Chairperson, the last one, I also think that we need interrogation of definitions. LED sounds great. Local economic development sounds great. BEE sounds great. But are the LED and the BEE players arbitrages, passes on? Are they developing original technologies and hardware and software? If so, great. But if all of that technology is developed overseas or by a few companies, and all you're doing as a black person or a local person is you're passing on for a fee, is that LED or is that BEE? Because that is one of the sectors that I don't think we necessarily have developed the skills to do it. So I think we need a fundamental interrogation there. And then the last thing is the drying out period. Is it enough to tell a firm you can't recruit while you're transacting? Is it not in CETA a fundamental requirement that there must be for all CETA members a drying out period of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years before you can join a company in the same field as CETA, an IT provider company? I just think that it has to be more than trying to what's his name, in order to fundamentally deal a blow with those who are bribable by the bribers in this case. So I just thought that I wanted to raise those few issues, Chairperson. I think more for the minister to try and open up these debates and to find regulations and procedures and laws even in this field. Thank you very much.
Okay, I'll just take Honourable from Skalvik and come back to you, Honourable Minister.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is a quite different question, but the minister gave us permission to ask any question. It may be a leadership question. What is it with CETA that CETA has had more than 10 CEOs? Its existence is 10 years. It's had more CEOs than years of existence. Thank you. That's
it's actually 14, Honourable Member. Okay. Yeah, and at the moment it's 318 CEOs. Okay, I think Honourable Maluluka has captured also the issue of, you know, the structure, the acting. I'm sure it goes in line with, you know, just the structural organization issues, which maybe after we'll have to hear about it quite a bit. At the moment, let me give the minister a chance to respond.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honourable Members. On the issue of the CEO, Honorable Manulek and Honorable Van Skalkwyk, it's true that the turnover rate is high. You have almost, in a period of 10 years, almost 13, 14 chief executive officers have been coming. With one who served a full term. Then you may realize that if you were to do some arithmetic calculations, you could find that some on average stayed shorter than anyone can expect. In as far as when do we expect to have to end this acting position, I've indicated that when it comes to the chief executive officer, by the end of November this year, we will have appointed, because we are at an advanced stage in terms of recruitment concept. Exactly as to what is there, because it's a worrisome factor. When I took office as a minister last year, September, on the 26th of September, on my table was the recommendation that you need to finalize the appointment of one recruit. But then to me, it came out very clear that you don't want to add into the statistics of people running away from this entity. You need to establish what is there. And for you to establish what is there, you need to talk about people who are in and people who have interest but are from outside. That will then include your broader shareholder constituency, which is government. That will then include the clients of CETA, and also from the supply side and CETA itself. It's a long story. It's over a short period of time, interrupted by elections in the process. But we believe that we have reached a stage where we are able to say to the portfolio committee and to say to the public that to the extent that we have investigated this matter, we believe that these tendencies are at play. I committed myself when debating during the budget vote to say we will be introducing a turnaround strategy for CETA in no time. That will include what we think are actually at play. Bringing a management and the CETA board last year on the 6th of November, of course informed by the fact that I then said to myself, but what is going on here? You have reasons to believe what is in there that is actually getting people. You come in, is it that we are not paying? But when you check in terms of the salary that CETA is paying, relatively speaking, it can't be that people are leaving because they are not paid enough. So what is at the center? I then said, no, maybe we need to listen to those who are there. That's why we brought together. And I said, you know, in a situation where you run out of reasons, the easiest thing to say is to raise a suspicion that there must be a ghost somewhere. Because if you raise that, no one can prove you right or wrong, because who has ever met a ghost? And I then said, but look, man, it looks like really we have serious ghosts here. Let's bring our heads together and check what is in there. And we together identified about 22 issues that are right at play that you need to address. Otherwise, it will be this person coming in as CEO and stuff like that. So we are convinced that we're going to end up the cycle of acting as quickly as I have indicated. We have concluded that the investigation will be tabling a turnaround strategy, which is a process informed by observations and findings on issues that we investigated. We are planning to then say when we approach the shareholder constituency decision making, the highest decision making structure, to then say this is how we strengthen the board, this is how we appoint the chief executive officer. We'll also unveil this turnaround strategy that we're talking about. And the chairperson will be available to present in details to the portfolio committee. We believe that at that stage we'll be able to talk to facts to the extent that we have been capable of finding solutions on challenges that confronted CETA for a long time. Sarah Sul is right. I'm answering a question today from members of this portfolio committee. Already two of the questions, we are starting to answer them now. The first one was the chief executive officer's one. The other one is exactly, what are the frequently raised issues? What is it that is raised with us as a shareholder about it? And when you look at this thing, the issue of procurement becomes one of them. The issue of pricing becomes one of them. But what are the finer details in as far as this procurement, in as far as this pricing is concerned? You're right, Mr. Rasool, we need to actually make strategic shifts. And this turnaround strategy that we're actually presenting is actually fully explaining in terms of how strategically we are moving around. And this is what we're saying will actually be in a position to table by the end of November latest. We are consulting the broader CETA constituency base to then say, let's actually look at how best we can deal with this issue. That's exactly what we're doing. Because if you don't do that, you will have a situation where you may say CETA is actually doing well, and the annual report is here, is unqualified and stuff. But through CETA actions, you may find that there are other departments that will have to find themselves in situations where they may not explain some of the things and stuff like that. So we're actually going to look at that. It's not to then say altogether the fingers pointed, but the IT industry is part of that. Actually, when we unveil the turnaround strategy, we'll be in a position to deal with those things. So you're quite right. Now, whether we are in a position now ready to say we may decentralize when it comes to procurement, you know, this is an impulsive reaction to the issues that are being raised. Whether we need to respond like that or not, we're actually dealing with the symptoms here. You are not actually dealing with, and if you decentralize, how do you decentralize in such a way that you have got central arrangements that will then be able to manage the thing so that you don't open opportunities for corrupt practices outside if you over decentralize. Either because you will find from within people who may be less sophisticated compared to those people who come from outside. Because in some areas that is where you find you may easily open the door for your enemies to come in. If when it comes to business intelligence, you find that you may be found wanting compared to the people who do business with you. So you are quite right that decentralization has to be a carefully thought of plan. But what is being raised here, like I said, is a reaction to the immediate situation. Like a situation where you may possibly find a child standing on the side of the road, sees an immediate danger because the dog is coming towards the child, and jumps into the road unaware that the car is coming. The dog will bite, that child will not be dying, but the car will completely kill it. Now, that may be a kind of a situation where you make impulsive moves. But when you do strategic moves, that is where you apply your mind to the issue. So you combine strategy and the tactics that you employ to actually arrive at a situation where you then say you will have a longer lasting position. We want to see a CETA that is a state IT agency of choice. That is the objective of this turnaround. That's why we brand it CETA today, CETA tomorrow, and CETA forever. We're actually looking at how we do it. All these things will be contained in that. That's exactly what I'm saying. Now, is it right to say that we may instruct industry now and say industry actors don't recruit while tender? It's a very interesting question. It's a debate that we raise. We call it in other areas, post-conflict restriction.
Contract.
And post-employment restriction.
Yes.
Cooling off. We say you need to come with a cooling off period. Such policy pronouncements cannot be just made impulsively again. You need to know exactly as to what is the legal authority that you command to be able to deal with some of these things. So the debate on a post-employment restriction, the debate on a cooling off if people have to leave, the debate on placing on the part of the industry players as to how they should actually deal with that is something that we need to look at. But the issue of integrity of the CETA employees is one thing that actually also needs to be managed. There are issues that, sometimes we make policy pronouncements without having fully applied our mind on. To some extent, even without even checking as to whether it is well within our mandate to make such policy pronouncements. So we are then looking at this thing. The turnaround strategy will embody all it takes. We have done sufficient research to then say this is exactly where we want to go when it comes to a turnaround strategy. It's not going to be just an ordinary turnaround strategy. I personally, Chairperson, hate to use this expression turnaround because I've seen people talking about turnaround strategy. It ends up in a situation where it is only them turning, but the situation around them is actually remaining static, So I hate to use this word, but for lack of better phrases, I have to actually climb the bandwagon, and here I am on.
Are there additional responses that you want to make on this issue from CETA?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I think the Minister has covered a lot of the, especially the strategic issues.
Yeah.
I think the detailed issues, some of them we can respond on in terms of operational, and some we will not, thank you very much, Minister. Some we will not be able to address today, we then can address them at a later stage, like, for example, Honorable, just trying to find the name, Honorable Bikani's question in terms of to confirm the rate of compliance. To be accurate, I think we need to then work on that because we cannot tell right now. But I'll raise some of the things that I can talk to and then leave at an operational level. One of the issues that you talk about is the reason why SLAs are not signed. The SLAs are a discussion between two parties, and there are negotiations that happens, and some of the negotiations, maybe Moses will share with some. One of the reasons, for example, I can talk about SEPs, talking to the other question. SEPs, we had a budget of 1 billion budget for them, but they were only given 800 and something million. So because of that, it took a long time to discuss, because then you try to find out what are the services that we should and we can't offer because of the constraints in terms of the budget. But I'm pleased to say that that's going to be signed within the next few days because that has been concluded now in terms of those negotiations. And then the issues about who am I online and Honorable Rasool, where you say we are being proactive, let me just assure the committee that as early as 2004, we looked at the issues of procurement and systems. We then put out and got assistance from Oracle to start a system that will help us. But what has happened, there has been a delay in the implementation. And they started with what they call, you know, the ICT people, the vanilla, which is actually general. But as of November, and as he has said, we are going to have a properly implemented system which includes contract management and all of those things. So as early as 2004, we had planned these things, and they started with general, and then now we are getting specific. And some of the things that we are picking up, we have been proactive, and there will always be those things coming up because there's this anti-fraud line. Because even if you have systems, there are still people that are involved. And if people are corrupt, you'll always come up with those things. One of the examples of who am I online problems was the issue of a fraudulent tax clearance certificate, for example. So when a supplier is giving us all this information, we look at tax clearance certificate, we think it's a genuine one. But then Auditor General went to the receiver to check, only to find that this is not a proper tax clearance certificate. Then now CETA is beginning to check all of them, whereas before it has never arose that you have somebody submitting a fraudulent tax clearance certificate. Now, if I can just look at some of the issues you talked about, cooling off period, and yes, the minister is right, because cooling off period has got implications of expenses, and there are labor-related issues, especially with people who are already at CETA. Maybe easy with people who are coming in, because then you can put all of those things in a contract. So we are looking at all of those issues. And I think Moses will address some of them. But Honorable Franskankvig, I think I will try to break and say that when I was chairman before, because I've been a chairman before, I think I'm the only chairperson who then employed a CEO who stayed for more than 3 years at CETA. Okay, that was Mabuso Msima. We hope that this new one will also stay as long as that, because that was the only CEO that stayed for three and a half years. But those the industry, the IT industry, though, is an industry that is full of turnover. I mean, the average stay on the IT is about 2 years. That's the average, whereas in other industries it's longer, because as you said, Honorable Rasool, it's an industry that's changing all the time. So staff turnover is something that will stay with us. But I think what we should manage is the succession planning and making sure that there are systems that make sure that there is the intellectual memory stays within the organization. I think, Moses, if you can just address some of the things that I did.
Okay. Thanks, Honorable Members. I'll quickly go through some of the questions which are quickly noted. Honorable Member Bigani raised an issue about timelines on the systems integration. These are project-specific timelines. For instance, the biggest systems integration project that we're doing is what we call the integrated financial management systems that we are doing on behalf of National Treasury and the Department of Public Service and Administration. It's a five-year program. The time frame is to conclude it by 2012, and we are in the process of delivering on that. It's a total rewrite of existing transversal systems that have been in place for the past 20 years or so, and as indicated, it's a complete total rewrite. It's currently being used right across the government between in provinces and at national level. So it's a long-term program. The second one is the electronic health record, which we're also working. We're currently working on what we call a phase zero that we hope to finish
in the coming by the current financial year, and then we will go on the actual work that needs to be done. So those kind of things are at project level, and there are project plans with specific timelines that we are measured on. The Honourable Member raised the issue of how are we using our profits to help in terms of training. Ramabele Mahomantita will answer on that, because she is our champion when it comes to learnership and training. The training that we do in the organization, we also offer training to government department employees that use government-specific systems. So we have a training division that looks at training IT-related capacity issues within the organization. We don't only train our employees, but we also train government employees.
Okay, sorry, I'll just interrupt. We've got a crisis, a big one, with time. And maybe can I request then the remaining, you know, because there's also those issues that the minister is. Can I request that they be done on writing then?
Okay.
So that we don't, we have already taken quite a lot. But it gives us a clearer picture. I'm sure we understand where we are. I'm not cutting you off, but based on the issue of time, I'm sure Sita will understand. We would really like to take other presentations now. I don't know, members.
Okay. Sorry, Chair, but based on the fact that they're going to give us something in writing, could they also add in that document that there'll be their procurement policy framework, the actual document? Can we have that as part of what you're going to reply in writing? Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I wanted to make one or two comments, if I may, as the government CIO.
Can I, not being rude, ma'am, we're definitely bad on time. At the moment, we would like to take the next presentation for now, because we still have two institutions and we have a meeting at one, so we cannot extend time beyond one. All of us should be off to the meeting at 1 o'clock. My apologies on that. Will it be a minute?
Half a minute.
Okay.
No, I'm very mindful that we don't have time, and I'm also mindful that we don't spend enough time. And I do want to suggest that we organize or structure an engagement with a little bit more time to engage. Otherwise, I think it's a little bit unfair also on committee members, because we never get an opportunity to look at what CITA is supposed to do, the governance model, and really go into the detail around that. And if you limit it to an hour, you never really get to explore the range of issues.
Okay,
so
ma'am. Can I just assure you, we've already we've got a plan in terms of how we're going to handle that. So I assure you that point is very critical, you're raising, and we have actually looked into it. We've got a plan as it stands, how we're going to proceed, but it will be taken on board. Okay.
Thank you, members.
Thank you, Sita, as well. But definitely the issue that's raised, there will be a follow-up in terms of questions, and there will be an interaction. We will arrange that. Can we then request the Public Savers Commission to actually proceed to put a presentation? Those who just need to take coffee, quickly take it and sit down, and then we will request Dr. Ralph Mukijima to lead us in that.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We are mindful of the time, as you have indicated, but I just wanted to apologize. We are mindful of the time constraints, Honorable Chair. I just wanted to mention that the Deputy Chair of the Public Service Commission, Ms. Tengen, was not able to be with us here today because of some commitments. As you know, she is the public service commissioner who is resident in KZN, and there are some commitments that she was undertaking there. The committee is familiar with the work of the Public Service Commission. Insofar as the corporate governance issue, the commission has an impeccable record over the years, as the presentation is going to attest. And the annual report, which is being tabled, complies with all recognized requirements, including the guidelines of the National Treasury. A challenge, I think, that faces the whole family of oversight, including the Parliament and organizations like the Public Service Commission, is that of resources. We mentioned the last time we spoke that there is a renewed commitment in our country on oversight, and but that very quickly must be meshed with resources that are increasing in the area. If you compare, for instance, the fact that in provinces alone, about over 60 billion rand is spent on service delivery and activities of provinces in the public service. Now, if you match that with the Public Service Commission's budget, you will find that is a very huge line. The Public Service Commission being, of course, the major oversight body for the public service. During the year that they were reporting, 2008-2009, the Commission also undertook an impact study of the Commission itself. That report is being tabled in Parliament as we speak. That report has given the Commission confidence in the road that the Public Service Commission has been traveling, but it also points to areas that need to be strengthened within the Public Service Commission. I will not waste more of the time. I will hand over to the Acting Director General, Mr. Dipofa, to lead us quickly through our presentation.
Thank you, Dr. Amgidzimu, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Committee. The presentation on the annual report of the Public Service Commission for the 2008-09 financial year follows. What we have done in terms of this presentation is that we will focus very quickly on two or three points around introductory remarks, but focus on them on the four programs of the Public Service Commission, which will be your administration, which focuses on your corporate services type of work, as well as the three line functions, programs 2, 3, and 4, as reflected on the slide, and then some concluding remarks. The first slide basically is just a quick reminder in terms of the mandate of the Public Service Commission. We have been through this with the committee before, so I will not go through that, but just to emphasize, as Dr. Mgijima has indicated, that it's an oversight body guided by the constitutional values and principles of public administration, which have been listed in this document. But I'll go straight into the program. The first program, administration, whose purpose, as we indicate here, is to manage, organize, and provide admin support to the PSC and its office. Here, a key issue to flag is that the PSC, once again and proudly so, obtained an unqualified audit in terms of the work of the Auditor General, and we believe this is the sixth year in a row where the Public Service Commission obtains an unqualified audit opinion from the Auditor General, with no matters for emphasis. We also just flag in terms of the total vote allocated to the Public Service Commission for the year. We are reporting on 8-9 that it was 113 million rand total budget of the PSC, which was 5.9% increase from the allocation that we got the year before, 2007-2008. Also, in terms of program one, administration, the finances, We also just indicated in the annual report that there were certain changes that were unexpected in terms of the improvements of conditions of service of staff in the public service generally. And the PSC was not allocated additional funds by National Treasury to cover those expenses. So the indication was that we should just try to prioritize within the budget to make sure that we accommodate those additional costs. And those are represented there. For example, whilst we budgeted at the 6% for the annual increase for public servants, the annual increase was eventually 10.5%. And we had to then deal with the shortfall ourselves and see how we reprioritize our budget to deal with that. Even in terms of conditions of service for SMS members, we ended up having a shortfall of 935,000, and we had to fund that from reprioritizing our own budget. In terms of the budget, again, just to flag that our goods and services, where we are able to conduct the oversight research, produce the reports, publish those reports, the budget that covers that comes from our goods and services, that had to be reduced from by 1.2 million rand by National Treasury. So just a highlight in terms of the finances of the Commission. But yet, what we were able to do here through tighter financial management was to ensure that we have a total budget spent of over 99%, with only 15,000 rand being surrendered to Treasury at the end of the financial year. Still with Program 1 and Human Resources, we just give the figures in terms of our staff establishment, that is 248 for the year we're reviewing, including the total commission of 14. The vacancy rate at the end of the financial year was 10.5%. Here, I think we tried to delay the filling of the post because, as indicated in the previous slide, there were some expectations in terms of reprioritizing funds, having savings so that we can cover the additional costs that the commission incurred as a result of improvement in the conditions of service of staff, for example. We give also information in the annual report in terms of gender representativity, females representing 43% of the total staff complement of SMS members, and the staff members with disabilities comprising 2.7% of the staff, an achievement we are proud of because it exceeds the national target of 2% by 0.7%. Also, just in terms of human resource management, that as required, all SMS members entered into performance agreements as required, and all officials at level 12 and below, in state of performance agreements, they are required to sign work plans, and all of them submitted the work plans as required. We also complied in terms of conducting our half-yearly reviews, as well as our annual performance assessment for all staff members. On the side of communication, a general statement to make here is that we've tried a number of mechanisms to promote the work of the Commission and share with a range of stakeholders on the work of the Commission through the media. We have a practice now with the roundtable discussions where we come together with a number of stakeholders to critique the work of the Public Service Commission, amongst others. We've also had a process during the year that we're reviewing where we held poverty reduction dialogues, where we were discussing with a range of stakeholders work that the Public Service Commission has done and getting their views on addressing critical challenges facing the country around poverty reduction. We also have an external magazine that we publish, and the last for this financial year that we're reviewing, the theme was on public participation. The second program, which is that of leadership and management practices, here we just give an indication of the outputs, the oversight outputs that we came up with. I will not be going through all of this, but just to highlight, as example, the report we produced on the quality of selection processes in national and provincial departments when it comes to the recruitment and selection of staff, the work that we do on an ongoing basis in terms of the implementation of the performance management and development system for senior managers. Every year we identify a province and we assess how the province implements the performance management and development system for senior managers, the signing of performance agreements, the process of conducting performance assessments, and so on and so on. And this time around it was the Northern Cape. just to indicate here that also within this area we have continued with our work on the performance agreements of heads of departments. We continued to do that. We just give statistics here in terms of the number of performance agreements of heads of departments that were submitted as required. And this is an issue that we raised with this committee in our presentation in June, that we're still concerned that we have heads of departments who are expected to submit performance agreements but who end up not submitting the performance agreement. But here we just give the figures there. We also give figures in terms of the evaluation of the performance of HODs for the year that we are reviewing. The compliance levels there are also reflected, that we had 36% of HODs at national level who were supposed to have their performance evaluated, indeed being evaluated. And at provincial level, it's even a lower compliance level of 18%. And we've done, because we are facilitating the evaluation of the performance of HODs, we then are in a position from a base IVU to generate statistics on this compliance level. Still on this program on leadership and management practices, another area of focus is labor relations improvement. And in the report, we just give a statistics in terms of the grievances that we dealt with. If you look at the graph on the right, that we received a total of 644 grievances, the Public Service Commission, and that's the progress in terms of those grievances. I think a bigger chunk there is the 281 there. You have a lot of grievances that are referred to the Public Service Commission prematurely, because departments are themselves responsible for dealing with the grievances, and it's only at a certain stage in the process where the aggrieved remains satisfied that the grievance can be referred to the Public Service Commission. But you have a situation where there is a tendency to take a shortcut and refer the grievances directly to the Public Service Commission. But we still then take them back to the department so that they can fulfill their responsibilities in this area. On the left-hand side there, we just reflect some of the reports that we finalized during this particular year. That report on the consistency of sanctions of misconduct, a very key product, we believe, because we have investigations being conducted. But sometimes when the investigation has been concluded, the sanction that you get for the same kind of misconduct that another person was involved in, you find that the sanctions are different, which just shows inconsistencies in the way the sanctions themselves are made. The next program here, program three, is that of monitoring and evaluation. The same pattern on the left-hand side, we just show the reports we've completed, the State of the Public Service Report 2009, which was focusing on the state of readiness of the public service for 2010 and beyond, and I believe this report has already been discussed with the committee. We produced a report on the evaluation of the ISRDP, Integrated Sustainable Rural Development Program. The chairperson, Dr. Mgijima, has already referred to the impact assessment of the work of the PSC, where we commissioned an external evaluator to critique our work, speaking to a range of interviewees as well, to get a sense of whether the Public Service Commission is having an impact or not. We're learning a lot from this report in terms of the recommendations that have been made. On the right-hand side, each year we identify in advance a focus in terms of the theme that we are going to use for the next year around the SOP State of the Public Service Report. So already we are working on the 2010 SOPS report with that theme, which was approved last year, on integration, coordination, and effective service delivery. And this, Chairperson, I've already reflected on the dialogue on poverty reduction strategies and interventions that we held during the course of the financial year as well. Still on Program 3, Monitoring and Evaluation, a range of reports focusing on service delivery in the public service, focusing on emergency medical service in the country, focusing on schools and district offices of education, focusing on the implementation of Batubili, the principle of information, the principle of courtesy, and also focusing on ports of entry in the country, how the Department of Home Affairs manages those ports of entry and the visa application processes. In terms of the fourth and last program, which is that of integrity and anti-corruption, our work has focused on public administration investigations, where, amongst other things, we just reflect the statistics there, the number of complaints that were lodged with the Public Service Commission through the complaints rules of the Commission, the total were 186, and the report reflects the status in terms of those where we conducted full-scale investigations, where we only did desktop audits, and you see that the majority of these are those where we conducted desktop investigations, and then the number of investigations that were finalized. We also get complaints through the National Anti-Corruption Hotline, and the report reflects the statistics there in terms of the total number of complaints that we received through the National Anti-Corruption Hotline and the progress in terms of those that have been closed and those that are still in progress at the end of the financial year. And the left-hand side reflects the reports that we have produced. I think just to draw the attention of members to the last one there on job applicants with a criminal record in the public service, because it's a very key feature of the recruitment and selection process that members of applicants are expected to reflect in the application form if they ever been involved in a criminal activity or not. And the issue has been, how does the public service handle that once somebody discloses that, actually I was involved in this? And that report deals in detail with those experiences and makes specific recommendations in that regard. Still with Program 4, looking at the area of professional ethics, one of the areas of focus for us here is the management of the financial disclosure framework for senior managers. What we do in the report is to reflect the statistics in terms of the compliance levels of senior managers with the requirements that they should disclose their financial interests. We also released a report on the effectiveness of the National Anti-Corruption Hotline and a report on the state of professional ethics in the Limpopo Provincial Administration. This is an annual report for us where each year we identify a province and assess the state of professional ethics in that particular province. We've already done KwaZulu-Natal, we've already done the Free State, and this time the report was focusing on Limpopo. A critical one as well, where we'll be looking at having it tabled in Parliament, is the report where we're looking at the implementation by the executive of resolutions made by Parliament and its committees pertaining to corruption. That was completed as well during the course of the financial year. The right-hand side, members, honourable members, just gives a sense of the statistics I was talking about in terms of financial disclosures. At the end of March 2009, we had an 85% compliance rate, which means that 15% of senior managers had still not disclosed their financial interest as required. The area here, which is not really a separate program, but which is an area that the Public Service Commission is reporting on in the annual report, because it is our contribution to the commitment to African renewal. We have two areas to report on here. The one is the work around the Association of African Public Service Commissions, which is an association of similar organizations, institutions as ours in the rest of the African continent. That association was established, and the chairperson of the Public Service Commission was unanimously appointed as the first president of the association, and the secretariat of the Office of the Public Service Commission. The secretariat of the association is the Office of the Public Service Commission, and therefore is responsible for the day-to-day operations of the association. As indicated in June when we spoke to the committee at the strategic planning section, this is a platform through which we share experiences across the African continent, challenges, good practices, and so on. And by doing so, we are able to learn from one another. The second and last area in terms of work in the rest of the continent is the support that we continue to provide to the Southern Sudan Civil Service Commission, where following an initial visit led by the chairperson in February 2008, we entered into a memorandum of understanding with the Southern Sudan Civil Service Commission. We have since provided that commission with a range of support activities. We have been to Southern Sudan twice. They have been here. There's been about three delegations from their side coming this side. In fact, in one of their visits, they came to meet with members of the portfolio committee, because as part of us showing them how we work with stakeholders in the country, they wanted to see how we interact, with Parliament, and that was facilitated by the portfolio committee. It's not only with the Southern Sudan Civil Service Commission that we are having a relationship in that country, also with the Southern Sudan Employees Justice Chamber, who then came to us for assistance in terms of training on the handling of grievances, and through an arrangement with Palama, we were able to provide, make arrangements for them to get the necessary training, but also to arrange for them to interact with the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council, to also interact with the CCMA, and those experiences they found quite valuable. That was all these were activities that were undertaken during the course of the year that we are reviewing. Just a quick concluding remark here. The chairperson of the commission did indicate that we are proud of our exemplary track record in terms of financial management, even in the context where we witnessed notable reductions in our budget. But we see ourselves being placed to well placed to play a strategic role in our democracy. We increasingly get in requests for investigations, requests for advice, and even within the limited resources that we have, we see that strategic role being very critical. And we will then, therefore, going forward, have to make sure that we create a balance between dealing with the demands that we have and the limited resources that are at our disposal, so that we will continue to give the necessary oversight support to Parliament and its committees. That's the annual report for the 2008-09 financial year for the Public Service Commission, Chairperson. Thank you.
Unless other members of the delegation want to add anything.
I would really like to thank a very short, precise presentation that the Public Service Commission has done. It covers quite a lot of areas. I must say, short as it is, I'm sure members will agree with me, the work that comes with it, it's a lot. I'm sure if you have noticed that, which therefore means that we will interact with the report at the moment, quite briefly, but while the Secretary of the Committee is here, we definitely have to set aside a day where we have a follow-up in terms of the issues that are raised on this commission prior to our cluster meeting that we're going to have on the 11th of November. So we really need to sit down with the commission on a follow-up on these key issues. Before I allow the members to actually interact with the committee, maybe let me just raise one area or two, maybe, particularly the area around the performance contract of the head of department. I think it's one of the major issues that we would really want to interrogate in details. For an example, one would also want to know that within the contract, do they integrate the issue of, you know, the key performance indicators on the side of disability, you know, is it part of that contract? You know, because then I'm not very sure we have interacted with it. Give us a light in terms of how is it done. Do they integrate the issue of the deliverables around disability and the deliverables around the issue of gender? You know, because those are the things that always hang. And most of the time, it's hanging whether, you know, after 5 years, the head of department has delivered on those areas or not. It's a matter of I didn't find women engineers, there was nothing that I could do, and it's okay, then we contract another. And also, even if they're there, to look at it in details, is maybe is there a way of evaluating annually as well? You know, because we can't wait for 5 years and start saying it never happened. You know, an annual evaluation. You know, because we talk where we have a situation about disability in the public service. In the public service that we haven't delivered quite well. So I just need a bit of information around that. Otherwise, those are the things that I would really want us to engage further in terms of our way forward. And then the other issue is the one of the, not the performance contract, but financial disclosure. So I think we would really need to thoroughly look into that issue as well in terms of the financial disclosures. Maybe, we have actually touched on it. We would really need a bit of a detail around that. Can I then give this opportunity to other members if there are issues they want to raise? Honorable Rasul?
Yeah, just a very light issue from my side. I think we have to do a lot of congratulations for Dr. Mgajima, now also for being the head of AFSCOM, the African Association now. If our Public Service Commission can provide both the president of that body and the secretariat, does it mean that they are overfunded and underworked?
Good one. Okay. Honorable Van Skalbeek.
Thank you, Chair. Two short questions. The first one, we've got a national anti-corruption hotline, and we've got a presidential hotline. Now, I want to know whether some of the complaints on the presidential hotline, are they being referred to the National Anti-Corruption Hotline? That's my first question. And then the second question, also in connection with the FDF. We heard that the as far as the declaration of spouses are concerned, there's a process in place. I just want to know how far is that process? Thank you very much.
Honorable Bikani.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to relate to the governance and monitoring challenges that the PSC has in relation to the two song service centers and the CDWs, the community development workers. We have the understanding that you can only give recommendations in as far as how these are run, but what I'd like to know from the PSC is, do you have those recommendations? Do you have any of those recommendations, in particularly for us as members? And what processes have you put in place in ensuring that there's a proper evaluation and monitoring as to where these processes end? Because we're experiencing a lot of problems in terms of the way they are run generally. Your involvement in your governance and monitoring issues, how far can you actually assist to that? Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Honourable Members, any other issue that you want to raise before the Public Service Commission responds? And if you don't have anything, can I request the... do you still want to add something?
No, the only thing I want to add is, okay, I saw that in the presentation they've actually laid out well our the labour relations issues. I think they should be complimented there that there appears to be a great improvement, but I'm still concerned about the financial part of the financial part of how much is being spent actually in terms of cases that are in government. And is there any process or project in place perhaps to help reduce these? Because we know that a lot of money is actually spent on, instead of people delivering services, they are away from the service itself. They are more concerned with their cases with the CCMA. Is there an improvement in terms of or a breakdown strategy of how we can best improve or decrease the financial aspects or involvement thereof.
Okay, thank you, members. You know, I'm glad that when Dr. Mkichima also talked about the issue of the renewed version, you know, the need for a renewed version in terms of the public service involvement in oversight, you know, I think it's a critical aspect, and definitely we need to engage more in terms of that, in terms of how best in the light of this current development do we think we have to revive that aspect, and, you know, we will actually interact as well and be part of how we also, what are our opinions in terms of also this renewed involvement in oversight. Like I suggested, when we have those engagements, we will definitely interact in those areas as well. Can I then give to the Public Service Commission?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Just on those last words you expressed, I think that it is indeed quite important, as we did resolve last time when we made a presentation to the committee, that we quickly find a way in which the work of the committee or the Public Service Commission is elevated to the level that it should be. Questions that arise, like what happens to the recommendations of the Public Service Commission, which are also arising today, will continue to be with us. So we should, Honorable Chair, as you say, quickly find time to interrogate how we are going to strengthen the oversight function, how we are going to be able to gain the greatest impact from the work and the association that we have and the interactions that we have with the committee. So I think that the Public Service Commission will appreciate that and look forward to the day that we are going to be able to do that. Your question also, Chairperson, was on questions of disability and gender and the performance contracts that are signed with heads of departments. Yes, I think that this is an area that needs to be revisited. What kind of key performance areas are contained in the performance agreements with heads of departments? I think that is a question that needs to be looked at. As things stand, there's been a tendency to increase the mandatory part of this care performance area. You are talking now of disability and gender. We have seen the incorporation of an increasing number of key performance areas that are mandatory to be undertaken by heads of departments, including areas like regional integration, which are prioritized by government. But I personally would be against us enlarging without you know, reviewing the priorities of government. I think that this is an exercise that should not be undertaken sporadically, because today it will be HIV and AIDS, tomorrow it will be another you know, important aspect. One is not saying that all these aspects are not important, but one has to be quite deliberate and you know, and consider what the implications of that are. But as you know, of course, the gender and disability are priorities of government, and so we would support that. But I think that we should take a step back and be able to see what are the aspects that need to be put on the table as far as these agreements are concerned. Now, the other question, we appreciate the kind words, I think, of congratulations that have come from members. The question of the National Anti-Corruption Hotline and the Presidential Hotline, whether in fact there's any cross-referral. In the experience that we have had, and we have been interacting with the Presidency, is that these are ongoing discussions. It would appear that insofar as the cases that pertain to corruption, the National Anti-Corruption Hotline, which we house, would continue to deal with that, and of course the cross referrals are already taking place. There are also other aspects, because the presidential hotline has got a lot of callers that go in. So there are questions also of looking into the capacity and how to interface the two systems so that there is no duplication. So work is ongoing in the area to ensure that the hotlines, the integrity of the hotlines is protected. The question of the declaration of spouses is very crucial. If you look at the recommendations that the Public Service Commission has made when it looked both in 2007 and 2008 in the framework of conflict of interest, this question has arisen and we have supported it. There is, of course, as we have pointed out before, a view that says that in South Africa it may be illegal for a requirement for spouses to declare when they are not in the employment of the public service. But we differ with that view in the Public Service Commission, and we hope that in the discussion of the conflict of interest framework, which is now, I believe, in front of the cabinet, that question would be resolved. We in the commission are convinced that if you do not include spouses in the declaration, then it will be defeating the whole purpose of declaration. On the question of the Tusong centers and community development workers, we have done, I know that we have done work on the Tusong centers with some recommendations there, and we have been tracking the recommendations, and I believe that we're also revisiting the area in terms of reviewing the work of these centers. And I think that perhaps the HMDG can add in terms of how, what are the pertinent issues and when actually we're going to undertake that. But it continues to be an area of importance, as you point out, Honourable Member. And it is also within the discussions that we're having with yourselves in terms of oversight, that requests to the Commission can be made in terms of the areas that are pertinent in the work of the committee, that we can undertake monitoring and evaluation, and particularly focused research in particular areas that are important to yourself. I will leave the answer of the other questions to the members of the committee.
Yeah. Chairperson, just quickly, Dr. Mkajima says that the presidential hotline is quite busy. Can he confirm that Honorable Van Schalkwyk has phoned 100 times already herself?
Actually, it was 101.
Yeah.
101. Okay.
Yes.
Oh, yes,
okay. Yes, I think just to quickly add that I think in the discussions that we're having with the presidency at the moment, because honourable members would remember that when the National Anti-Corruption Hotline was established, it was established strictly for corruption cases. But because there wasn't anything other than the NACH, people were then using it for service delivery related queries as well. Now, what's happening at the moment is that the presidential hotline receives corruption allegations as well, and they have said to us, we would like to refer. In fact, they started referring the corruption-related allegations to us for investigation. But what we are doing now is to engage with them around protocols for that process, because for us to say this is a case that can be investigated as a corruption allegation, there are certain questions you need to ask the person when they phone. Otherwise, somebody says, I saw this car driving past me with a GG registration, and they had their siren, and then they stopped along the way. They were not in a hurry anyway. But how do you then investigate something like that without the necessary specifics that can help you to follow up? I think on the issue of Tucson centers, also just to add that we did a report, I think around 2002, 2003, on Tucson centers, and there are specific recommendations in that one. In the current work plan of the Public Service Commission for 2009-10, we have a follow-up study on Tucson centers. I think in early in the new financial year, we will come up with a further set of recommendations that can be used in this regard. the question that was asked about grievances and saving government resources because people spend a lot of time away from their work as a result of this. I think where the major concern is in this area is where people deal with investigations, where people get suspended on full pay and the necessary hearings do not take place. Yeah, I think that's where the biggest problem becomes because these people are on full pay but they are not working. And we recently dealt with a question from the Portfolio Committee on Correctional Services where they were querying what is happening in correctional services exactly around this issue. And the only way to deal with it is for people to follow the prescripts. Because if you suspend somebody as a precautionary measure on full pay, you are required to conduct a hearing within a certain period. So you don't solve the problem by suspending the person and then going on with your life. You suspend as a precautionary measure, but you are required to hold a hearing within a particular number of days and then come up with a decision. You can end up requesting for an extension of the suspension on mutual agreement with the person concerned, but that is not the solution itself. It's so that you can then have the necessary time to conduct the investigation and then conduct a hearing. So the way that this can be dealt with is to ensure that people follow the prescripts when it comes to matters relating to this. The same thing applies to ordinary grievances where people do not get suspended. We indicate in our grievance trends analysis that the problem is where the necessary state work that has to happen at departmental level doesn't happen. So somebody lodges a grievance, and they, within a certain number of days, the employer must deal with the grievance. After the grievance has been dealt with, within a certain number of days, the aggrieved must indicate in writing whether they accept that outcome or not. If within a certain number of days, if the aggrieved is not satisfied, the grievance must then be escalated to the Public Service Commission, and we have a certain number of days to deal with it, and so on and so on. Now, if you have instances where those processes and procedures are not observed, and grievances, for example, are just sent directly to the Public Service Commission, as I've indicated, that wastes time because we don't have the jurisdiction to deal with the grievance directly before it has gone through the necessary steps at departmental level. Also, if people sit on it at departmental level, not observing the stipulations in terms of time frames, that just prolongs the process unnecessarily. So it's basically that the prescripts are there, the processes are there, and they have to be followed to deal with the problem that Honorable Bigani raises. Thanks.
No, thanks a lot. Other issues that need further engagement, for instance, I think I'll still come to the issue of contracting and what issues, you know, was in this case will refer to the past commitments, to the constitution maybe. I know the issue of disability, it might not fall quite well within the constitution. But nonetheless, let's engage on that. We'll take it gradually, step by step. Also in the light that next week we have a presentation by the department, ne? And part of what we wanted to integrate is the issue they raised of the gender focal points and the job description. So I think it's fine. We will gradually take it on board, but it's very easy, if I can emphasize, to just lose the issue of disability, issue of gender, based on our non-commitment, and it's happened for a long time. So long as we don't have a way of enforcing it, it will continue to be this way. We'll continue to say we've missed our targets on disability, and it becomes something that has passed, you know, because we really don't want to commit on those areas. So nonetheless, those issues will take them on board gradually, step by step, but those are the issues, the real issues, especially the issue of gender. Is also, we talk of non-racialism and so on. We don't want to talk only barriers into involvement in decision-making, but there must be closing of the gap between the poor and the rich. And it can only happen through the implementation of programs that takes those women there. So we realize that the gap widens, and you know. But then, nonetheless, I think it's an issue that warrants engagement on continuous basis, but properly. And I also agree that when we then have to review other aspects, we can't just decide, now we review, we put this, we put that. It should be a process that is correctly done so that it makes sense. But I must indicate that we are very grateful about the presentation and the discussion that took place. and then we are arranging a follow-up date on the issues that are raised, because it's not only the report in this case, it's the how the report is going to be implemented, which we're very keen as this parliament to ensure that it is implemented, and also issues that you want to also raise with the Public Service Commission are also taken on board, so that we synergize the existence of all